2008, Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy on Novam Radio. Streaming live at novamradio.com. Numbers 800-989-1480. Sammy Cam is in effect. Sounds a little hinky today, though. We'll work on it a little bit later. This is the day the Fourth Amendment died. Sorry, folks. How does it feel? We will be talking about that more. We just want you all just to... just to go to sleep, America. Just go to sleep. Don't worry about your Fourth Amendment. Relax. Relax. The DNA test came back on JonBenet Ramsey. There's no other white girls in any wells right now. Just go to sleep, America. It's not the Constitution's old. It's almost what? It's got to be at least like 50 years old by now, right? Maybe in the 60s. I don't. What's older, John McCain or the Constitution? Forget about it. Go back to sleep. We'll wake you when the war with Iran starts. We'll let you know the next time Britney Spears cuts her hair. Just go to sleep, America. The Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, totally overrated. Your government's in charge now. Just sit back and relax. We'll be handing out all the bracelets that electrocute you on the airplane soon, folks. Unbelievable. What a day, folks. What a day. The FISA bill passed as expected, and... you know, just a genuine disappointment, Obama and really all those. You had a majority of Democrats in the Senate, of course, voted against it, but it took a democratically led House and Senate to pass this new FISA spying bill, the one that basically eliminates the FISA court's relevance. You remember back during the Clinton administration when all the right-wingers would talk about this horrible secret FISA court, which allows the government to spy on you. We don't even know who these people are. Well, now that court's not even relevant anymore. They're just completely, they're even beyond a rubber stamp. They don't even stamp it now. They just have to lick it. And, of course, those telecommunications companies that spied on you illegally, forget about it. How many weeks do you think it's going to be before AT&T comes out with a special calling card? 2 cents back every time we spy on you. We're going to do it anyways. Why not build the savings account based on how much we're spying on you? We will talk about that a little bit more. But John McCain, this is what Obama's calculation is. John McCain is such a horrible candidate that they're not that worried. If they do something like, vote for the FISA, but whatever. John McCain at that same so-called public town hall that he held, where he kicked out that 60-year-old librarian for holding the sign that Bush equals McCain, John McCain running on his record as a war hero. Did you know he was a war hero, folks? Did you know he was tortured? He broke, but I would break too. He denigrated the country, but he's got such a great voting record for veteran affairs, according to John McCain. But apparently, some other guy who didn't get the memo that you're not supposed to question St. McCain, particularly when it comes to veteran issues, got up and asked him a question. This is number four. Here you have John McCain notices a vet says, I'm going to take his question to prove how vet-friendly I am. This is number
four. I'd love to recognize you first, sir. Thank you. Here, bring him the camera.
Bring the camera. I don't know what he's going to say.
Senator, veterans and all Americans admire your service in Vietnam. We admire the fact that you're the Straight Talk Express, but we know that you voted against, or well, actually you didn't vote on the new GI Bill, and you spoke out against it. We understand you had a difference on that, but we haven't heard an explanation of why you voted against your colleagues' proposals to increase health care funding in 2004, 5, 6, and 7, when we had troops coming back from two wars.
Oh! How dare you question St. McCain on Veteran Affairs? So McCain, instead of answering the question, why didn't you vote for the GI Bill? Well, he gets a little testy, as John McCain will. This is number five.
In case you missed it, we reached an agreement, and we passed the legislation, and we will now not only have the increased educational benefits, but we will also have incentives for people to become career military people and be able to transfer those benefits. Now, I'm disappointed that it only went back to 2001, Senator, and I was disappointed that Senator Webb didn't support making it permanent, and Senator Graham and I and other veterans will be looking to try to extend that to all veterans, not just 2001. I hope you'll urge Senator Webb and others to agree with that. My friend, all I can say is I don't know what you're pointing to, but I've received every award from every major veterans organization in America. I've received every organization in America their awards. Now, sir, I don't know what you're referring to, nor do... Sir, I'm responding to your question, and then I will let you speak again if you'd like, but you want to, the way we try to conduct these is let people finish, and then I will go back to to you. I'll go right back. So I don't know what bill you're referring to, and I don't know what you're referring to, and I'll be glad to have you refer to it.
You don't know what the GI Bill is?
But the reason why I have a perfect voting record from organizations like the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, and all the other veteran service organizations is because of my support of them. But you can go ahead and respond if you want to. Go ahead. Give him the microphone back.
Oh. So he doesn't know what the GI Bill is. He has no idea what the GI Bill could possibly be. And of course, you're speaking out of turn, sir. I don't know what you're talking about. I have a perfect record. Well, let's hear what the vet says. Because apparently he's done the research. It's number six.
I'll respond by saying this, that you do not have a perfect voting record by the DAV and the VFW. That's where these votes are recorded. And the votes were proposals by your colleagues in the Senate to increase health care funding of the VA in 2003, 4, 5, and 6 for troops returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. And you voted against those proposals. I can give the specific Senate votes, the numbers of those Senate votes, right now.
Well, I thank you, and I'll be glad to examine what your version of my record is. But, again, I've been endorsed in every election by all of the veterans organizations that do that. I've been supported by them, and I've received their highest awards from all of those organizations. So I guess they don't know something you know. So I thank you very much, and I will continue to be proud of my support for the veterans of this country and proud of their support.
There you go. John McCain claims he has a perfect voting record. Well, lucky for us, we have John Soltz. He's an Iraq Kosovo veteran, co-founder and chair of VoteVets.org. He's going to join us in just a moment. We'll ask him, does John McCain have a perfect record when it comes to veteran affairs? And maybe John Soltz will know what this GI Bill is. Who's there? GI Bill? What the hell does that mean? In the meantime, go back to sleep, America. Go back to sleep. We'll wake you when we get more DNA results from the latest missing white girl. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. We'll be right back.
We sang dirges in the dark today. The music's down. I die. This'll be the day that I die.
We are back. It is Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy on Novam Radio. Number is 800-989-1480. We will get to your calls in the next segment. But right now, since we have had just a period of, I think we're going to have this basically until November, John McCain basically saying that he is qualified to be president of the United States because of his war record, and at the same time saying he has a perfect record from veterans organizations, and basically shouting down a vet who had the audacity to question him on this. On the phone, we have John Soltz. He is an Iraq and Kosovo veteran, co-founder and chair of VoteVets.org. He joins us tonight to talk about John McCain's voting record when it comes to veteran affairs. And now, John, I got to ask you a question right off the bat, because John McCain didn't seem to know what this vet was talking about. What is there such a thing called the GI Bill?
What I found so interesting is how he tried to spin out of the GI Bill. I mean, we lobbied him for months and months and months, op-eds in the Los Angeles Times. We did an entire internet video that got viewed 100,000 times with Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films with Iraq That's New, the GI Bill. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in ads going after McCain, and when the White House needed somebody to carry their water to oppose the Webb-Hagel GI Bill, they picked Senator McCain. And McCain and Burr and Graham offered watered-down legislation, not because of transferability, but because it was too expensive. And their argument was it offered too much benefits to young people to entice them to get out of the military, when in reality they want to get out of the military because they're sick of going to Iraq 15 times in the last 3 years, and because guys like Tom McCain don't close the hole of the loopholes for the contractors that recruit them out of the military, like Blackwater that recruits our special forces. So he's trying to slip out of this now because he knows it's such a political liability. But not only did he not show up to vote for it the first time because he was hanging out with the San Diego Chargers owner, but the second time he didn't show up for it either. So it's fair game.
Now, so let me get this straight. Now, he is worried that if you provide benefits for military personnel when they come out of the service, that it's going to encourage people to leave. So he doesn't perceive it as something that, it encourages them to go in the first place and basically says thank you for your service. I mean, that's his problem with the bill?
That's his argument. And the independent investigations on this said that what you lose in retention, you'll gain in recruitment. But retention's a real problem in the military. And everyone has a right to be worried about retention of our non-commissioned officers and officers. But what Senator McCain's not looking at is he's the reason people are getting out. Because they have destroyed the military. I mean, you have 90% of your army in Iraq, so you're either in Iraq, going to Iraq, or you just got home from Iraq. So a West Point officer has to be in for 5 years when he graduates from the academy. He's looking at two or three tours in Iraq. The second thing is the privatization of the military and all the guys that are hanging out with John McCain, his lobbyist buddies, like Mr. Black, whose firm does lobbying for Blackwater. They go into the special forces, and they look for our Green Berets, and they offer them two, three times as much money as they're getting right now to do the same job on the civilian side. So the problem with retention is a direct result of Senator McCain. And these new arguments that he's making about transferability to family members is not what their original opposition to this bill was. It's just that a large majority of the Republicans caved, and we went from 58 co-sponsors to 77 that voted for the bill, and it left John McCain left in the cold. And so he's trying to wiggle his way out of it. The guy who had the questions is also correct. DAV gave him like a 20% rating. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America gives John McCain a D rating. And so McCain's wrong. He doesn't know his own record on veterans issues, and that's because he's listening to his political people and not doing what's right for vets.
I'm looking at a list. In 2006, the AIVA gave him a grade of D. The disabled American vets, 20% in 2006. I mean, I don't know where it is that he's getting his information, but of course, now he's just spinning, and he's had to do this on a couple of different fronts, because now he's got this situation where just moving along to his policy on Iraq in general. He is on record as saying that if the Iraqi government said that they want us to leave, then he would, of course, have to say, yeah, we got to leave. And now that Maliki and Rubai and we're getting a third guy out of the Iraqi government now saying that we want a timetable, he's just saying this is politics. Well, let me ask you this, John. What does it say that if our sponsor in Iraq, for political domestic reasons, has to say that we have to have a timetable, what does it say about the Iraq policy?
John McCain's out to lunch on the Iraq policy. His Iraq policy is a policy of retreat and surrender to Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. If we had taken the 5 surge brigades that went into Baghdad last year and put them in Afghanistan, we would have doubled the amount of troops on the ground there. Violence has increased. We had the largest bombing in Afghanistan 2 days ago that we've seen since the Taliban fell. So I think the first thing to understand is John McCain has our country in a policy of retreat. He's essentially waved the white flag of surrender at bin Laden. I think this debate's over with Iraq. I mean, come on. If the Iraqis don't want you there, John McCain's own words in 2004 said we should leave. And I think we should read our history. And George Washington, it's the last thing that he said, you know, publicly when he left the White House or the presidency after his term was, you know, we should be concerned about getting involved in these foreign entanglements. And if our founding fathers knew that our American military was beholden to the domestic politics of a foreign country, where they wanted the security of Iraq more than the Iraqis themselves, I think they would roll over in their grave. And that's what John McCain is more concerned with Iraqi security than he is American security. And it's an absolute sham at this point. If violence is up in Iraq, John McCain says we need to keep our troops in Iraq. If violence is down in Iraq, John McCain says we need to keep our troops in Iraq. And it's just not sound foreign policy making.
Well, I mean, he's on record saying that he thinks that we can be there for 100 years. And so he's going to make that happen come hell or high water. He won't be around to see it, though. All right, John, thank you so much for joining us. John Schultz, the organization is VoteVets.org. VoteVets.org. Check it out right now. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We got to take a break, folks. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. The day the Fourth Amendment died. Broadcasting live at NoVam Radio. Sam and Cam just, I don't know, total mess at samcedarshow.com right now. It's too bad, too, because I'm wearing a striped shirt. I never wear stripes. But hey, it's a new day in America where the Constitution doesn't mean anything and, well, the DNA tests are back in, and somebody, whatever, who cares? I certainly don't. It's like these type of days, folks, where I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if we should all just be hoping, for peak oil, and who knows? I don't even know what to say. I mean, I'm bummed out about Obama. Yeah, he's better than McCain, and I'm going to vote for him. But I really do think this is just a cop-out. Today, Russ Feingold said the following. I sit on the Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. I am one of the few members of this body who has been fully briefed on the warrantless wiretapping program. Something like 70 of the senators who voted today don't even know why they were giving the telecommunications corporations immunity. They don't even know why. And based on what I know, he wrote, I can promise that if more information is declassified about the program in the future, as is likely to happen either due to the Inspector General report, the election of a new president, or simply the passage of time, members of this body will regret that we passed this legislation. I am also familiar with the collection activities that have been conducted under the Protect America Act, and I will continue under this bill. I invite any of my colleagues who wish to know more about these activities to come speak to me in a classified setting. Do not hold your breath, Senator Feingold. Publicly, all I can say is I have serious concerns about how those activities have impacted the civil liberties of Americans. If we grant these new powers to the government and the effects become known to the American people, we will realize what a mistake it was. I am sure. I wouldn't worry about it. American people are never going to know. I was listening to some radio broadcast today. Got one line. New FISA bill. Protect Americans. DNA reports on blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Go back to sleep, America. Lawrence Lessig, the guy who invented the Creative Commons, which is a new type of copyright, and just a sort of a renowned scholar and genius and attorney in this the online world, as it were, and was a big Obama supporter. He wrote today, self-swift boating is to swift boat yourself. For a campaign to do something that has the effect of undermining its own candidate's strongest characteristic with actions that are at best misleading, the Obama campaign has now self-swift boated candidate Obama. The best evidence that they don't get this is the telco immunity. Obama said he would filibuster a FISA bill with telco immunity. He has now signaled he won't, and he didn't. When you talk to people close to the campaign about this, they say stuff like, come on, who really cares about that issue? Does anyone think the left is going to vote for McCain rather than Obama? And Lessig says, that's a hard question. We tried to get it right. Anyway, the FISA compromise in the bill was a good one. Well, that's just crock. There was no compromise here. It was beyond a capitulation. He goes on to write that the point was not the substance of the issue. A mistake about substance is not why this flip is a mistake. I agree that a tiny proportion of the world thinks defeating telco immunity is important. The vast majority don't even understand the issue. But what this perspective misses is just how easily it will be used to use this flip in policy positions to support the argument Obama is no different. Now, I don't exactly agree with Lessig on this. I don't think there's going to be a price to pay for this. 3 or 4 months, I don't think anybody's going to be talking about this. It's a very narrow group of Americans who care enough to pay attention, and the corporate media has told you nothing. Nothing about this. David in San Diego, California. Welcome to the program, David.
Hey, Sam.
How's it going?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing great. A testament to you is that I've been on hold for like over a half hour, and I'm standing on the Key Arena floor in Seattle, ready to watch the Foo Fighters. And I guess a lot of that is because I find you so astute, and that I think that I just wanted to hear your show right now. And my iPhone doesn't have the technology to be able to listen to you on any location.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Soon the iPhone will, though. That is my understanding.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope your vision of the iPhone podcast comes to fruition. A lot of times I blog on your site as Invasion 14, and I've been a longtime fan, and I just want to call and say I'm glad to hear that you're on the radio again.
Well, David, I appreciate it, and go in, enjoy the concert, and you know, take a trip over to either Blue America or this new Strange Bedfellows pack. And, you know, again, I was saying last night, this is all going to be about playing a game of chess. You know, the majority of Democrats voted against this, but there were certain Democrats who made it possible for this bill to pass, and they need to pay a price. They need to pay a price.
Yeah, well, definitely. I'm really disappointed with what happened today. I agree that a lot of people and the general public doesn't actually see what has happened to the Constitution today. And I just am thankful that people like you are out there and you're still trying to make headways into the voice of America to get that side heard about the reality of what is being done to the Constitution.
Well, I appreciate the call, David. Go enjoy the concert, man, and thanks for hanging on the blog.
All right, I will. I might call back just to listen to your show on hold, so you should tell your screener just to let me hear the rest of your show.
All right. <man. laughs> Thanks, I appreciate it.
All right,
it.
Have a good show.
All right, you too.
All right, thank you.
I'll be
Bye.
Here the rest of the week, folks. If you paid a ticket for a concert, by all means, go to the concert. Let's go to Mark, listen on the internet, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hey, how's it going, Sam?
Well, it's going pretty good. I mean, I'm feeling at least now I know they can spy on us at will.
Yes, it's very comforting thought. Of course, I know a little bit about what was happening in the 70s, and technically on anything going over to big ditches, that was true, too. The reason why I initially called, though, was in regards to the previous topic of Mr. McCain being the great veteran. And I came out of the service in 80 and was going through my Vietnam era GI Bill. And McCain parachuted in, became senator. And one of the first things we noticed was that he was MIA. He mm-hmm. really was. He wasn't POW. He was MIA for us. In fact, guys would call up and say, well, why didn't you vote for this bill or that bill? And he would say that, oh, well, I have to abstain from that because I have a conflict of interest. So the vet, you know, we looked at each other and said, well, what is this? We let this guy in, and he's not going to represent us?
A conflict of interest? I mean, that's what he's supposed to bring there.
Right.
I mean, the fact that he actually can add something to the discussion. You know, I'll tell you what. There is a I've seen a video of John McCain. He was interviewed, I think it was in 1997,
yeah.
On 60 Minutes. And they told a story when John McCain was in the Hanoi Hilton, because his father was an admiral in the Navy, they allowed his captors basically said, you have the right to go home if you want to go home. He said,
well,
no.
That's an interesting thing, too, because I know a vet by the name of Gunderson down here. And you'd have to get it from the horse's mouth, but he says things a little bit more harsh than that about him.
I know there's some question, but let's just take that as a granted for the moment, okay? Now, I know there's some question as to whether or not that's true, but I don't want to get into that. You know, who knows? I know he's
well,
there
his,
for...
about his general conduct and tit for tat.
Well, all right. So be that as it may, there was another guy that supposedly, that John McCain claims, basically saved his life after John McCain was subject to some beatings, being tortured. Another prisoner. And at one point, the captor said to this other prisoner, you can go home. And he said, okay, I'm going. And apparently, John McCain, in the 30, 40 years that he's been back, refuses to say one word to this guy who he claims saved his life. And I think there's this same level of resent. I think this is, you know, it's sort of the same dynamic as George Bush is a dry drunk. I think John McCain says, look, I was tortured. I was over there. You guys coming back. I didn't need anything. Now, of course, he married an heiress. But so why do you guys need anything?
Well, I think you've got a very good, interesting point on that. But I'll even say that in the last 8 years, starting with the 2000 election, he seemed to be providing the cover for the back door of Bush if for some reason the Democrats did grow a set of huevos that if George and Cheney were impeached, he'd be the not Bush to come in and put the trails dead. Similar to what they had to do after Nixon left in finding Jerry Ford to make all the trails go dead there.
I don't know about that, but I'll tell you, there's something going on with John McCain that I think is just not right, but I appreciate the call, Mark.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we got to take a break here. 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
Like shots of Judas in it. If you
We're back. Sam Suter filling in for Mike Malloy, Novam Radio. Numbers 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. All right, I got to hear this. Let's go to Joy in Santa Cruz, California. Welcome to the program, Joy.
Hi, Sam.
How are you, Joy?
I'm fine. I wish you weren't bubbling on your Sammy cam, but...
Well, what are you going to do?
Don't know. I'm going to listen to you in other ways.
Right.
But I want to respectfully challenge why everybody's so upset about this.
About, what is this?
About FISA.
Okay, please do.
Okay, now, I am a liberal, okay? So keep this in mind. I don't think that this is as big a deal as we're making it out to be. I read what Obama had to say about this. It's still going to guarantee that we have to have search warrants for FISA. It's reinstating the FISA court.
But the fact of the matter is, Joy, that it does neither of those things. The warrants are now going to not actually be determined by the court based upon the merits of the warrant application. They're simply going to be issued based upon the Department of Justice saying, we have a reason. And if they certify that they have a reason, the FISA court has no recourse but to say, okay.
Okay, well, that's more information than I had before, because I read what Obama explained.
Well, this is what's so problematic about it, is that there is no compromise here. This is actually worse than it was. This is what people have been talking about.
Will allow criminal prosecution.
Yeah, but it doesn't make a difference, because you'll never be able to get evidence to actually apply a criminal prosecution. I mean, you're saying if people abuse it, there's no way to know if they abused it, because all they have to do is certify that they have a reason that they think is reasonable, and the court has to say, bingo, you get the warrant. It used to be that you actually had to provide for the court the reasons why you want the warrant. Now, the Department of Justice only has to go in front of the court and say, we have reasons. All right. We believe
you. So it expands their abilities.
It expands the abilities of the executive to spy on you.
But it does allow the Inspector General to investigate the criminal issues, including Bush, including the administration. I know it's giving them immunity to, retroactive immunity to the civil courts or the civil cases, but we can still go after these people criminally.
Well, I mean, the laws have been changed now. I mean, I think this whole thing about the criminal prosecution, look, if they're not willing to stand up for this now, do you think when the Inspector General gives them a secret report that they're going to stand up and say, okay, now we're going to take them to, now we're going to prosecute? I mean, if they wouldn't even wait to get this Inspector General report, which was one of the amendments offered by Bingham, I guess.
Bingaman.
Yeah. To wait until this Inspector General report came out, then why would you think it's going to be relevant?
Well,
I'm sorry, okay, Joy. I wish I could go there with you. I mean, listen, believe me, nobody wants a silver lining to this more than I do. But I just think it's a bad bill. It wasn't
necessary. Well, it is a bad bill, and it was poorly written.
Well, of course it was poorly written, because nobody's paying attention to it. I mean, nobody cares. And so, you know, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, Joy. And listen, am I going to vote for Barack Obama over John McCain? Of course.
Well,
not even going to think twice about it. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to be happy with it. I mean,
he can go after them after he gets in office.
Well, yeah, or maybe he can just use the powers that he has. I mean,
oh, let's not. No, I hope that's not.
I mean, Joy, look, and frankly, I'm not even convinced this helps him electorally. At the end of the day, I think he could have used. I think there's a missed opportunity. But listen, I appreciate your perspective on this. I can hold these two thoughts in my head at one time. I can be pissed. And I can still say it's still in my benefit to vote for Barack Obama. It's still in the benefit of the country to vote for Barack Obama. I can hold both of these ideas in my mind at the same time. And I'll tell you something. Here's the one story of the day. Well, actually, there were two today that cheered me up. This is from the Raleigh News Observer. L.F. Eason III gave up the only job he had ever had rather than lower the flag to honor former U.S. Senator Jesse Helms. Eason, a 29-year veteran of the State Department of Agriculture, instructed his staff at a small Raleigh lab. Apparently he set this lab up not to fly the U.S. or North Carolina flags at half-staff on Monday, as called for in a directive to all state agencies by Governor Mike Easley. When a superior ordered the lab to follow the directive, Eason decided to retire rather than pay tribute to Helms. This is what he told his staff. Regardless of any executive proclamation, I do not want the flags at North Carolina Standards Laboratory flown at half-staff to honor Jesse Helms anytime this week. He told his staff that he did not think it was appropriate to honor Helms because of his doctrine of negativity, hate, and prejudice, and his opposition to civil rights bills and the federal Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Think about that, folks. This guy, you want to talk about hero. We love to hear hero thrown around. This guy is a hero. If members of this administration had half the integrity that this guy had, if people like Colin Powell had half the integrity that this guy had, we wouldn't be stuck in this quagmire in Iraq. Good for him. L.F. Eason III, 51 years old, goes into retirement because he actually had some principles. That's encouraging. Sam Cedar and from Mike Malloy, 8898-1480. Cedar in for Mike Malloy tonight and the rest of this week. 800-989-1480, streaming live at Novam Radio. Sammy Cam
is in effect, ladies and gentlemen,
at samcedarshow.com. Oh, this is just lovely. This is just a heartwarming story. G8 Summit in Japan, among other things that they are discussing, is the food crisis that apparently is going. Apparently, we're running out of food. The combination of weather and the use of crops for biofuel and the oil, the prices of oil. G8 Summit, you're not going to believe. I mean, this is, you know, this is just a perfect example of what we're dealing with in general, folks. They had a, let's see, a six-course lunch and a... gosh, I can't even count how many courses they had for dinner. This is just unbelievable. The dinner is six-course lunch at the summit of leading industrialized nations on the island of Hokkaido. Included delicacies such as, well, I'll read a little bit of the menu here. Oddly enough, I had many of these things today for lunch. Their working lunch at the G8 Summit, talking about the world food crisis. White asparagus and truffle soup. Schadfreude of Kangani crab. Almond oil foam and tapenade. Supreme of chicken with stuffed thigh, nuts and orange savory, and beetroot foam. What's with all the foam dishes? Beetroot foam, almond oil phone foam. And then, of course, there was the cheese selection. And for dessert, a peach compote, ice cream and raspberry coulis, coffee and petit fours. That was just lunch! Of course, for dinner, boiled clam, tomato, shiso, and jellied clam soup. Water shield and pink conger with soy sauce vinegar. Nikki makes a great water shield and pink conger with soy sauce vinegar. Boiled prawn with chozu vinegar jelly, grilled eel and burdock, fish, who cares? Nothing like sitting down to talk about a food crisis with a six-course working lunch. Man, I didn't even... Hot onion tart for dinner, corn and caviar. Sounds delish. All right, Mike. Listening, Golden, Colorado. Obama had no choice but to vote for FISA. Is that what you're going to tell me?
Yeah, Michael, well, why don't I just give you the bullet points and see if you connect the dots the same way... Or, I'm sorry, Sam.
Yes.
And see if you connect them the same way I do.
Okay.
Okay. We know that there are some pseudocrats who may be complicit in some of the Bush administration's crimes, correct?
Pseudocrats?
Yeah. Blue Dog Democrats.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, maybe. But maybe. I mean, I don't know. They're, you know, look, 70 senators in the Senate, anyways, have no idea what went on. So
right.
There very well may be some of the Democratic leadership who had signed off on this. It's possible.
We can revisit that, and I'll give you the evidence if we get time.
Okay, but I'll grant it for the sake of argument.
Okay. Hillary may insist on a roll call vote in Denver. It looks like she's going to.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay.
Superdelegates can change who they vote for. Obama inexplicably reversed his position on FISA, and that was a self-inflicted wound. Why would Obama shoot himself in the foot unless someone was metaphorically holding a gun to his head?
I mean, you know, Mike, I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's a theory, and it makes some sense, but I just don't know if I buy it.
I can't make sense of Obama's behavior otherwise. He's done a self-inflicted wound, which he had no reason to do.
I mean, I think the trade-off really was most people you talk to have no idea what FISA means. You haven't had any coverage of this in the mainstream media. He took a position during the primary. He was looking for, you know, there was like something like 15% of Democratic voters said they would have supported Russ Feingold had he run for president.
Mm-hmm.
He made his claim that he was going to filibuster this FISA thing if it had telco immunity when he was in Wisconsin. You know, I think it's a political calculation. I think at the end of the day, I'd like to think that there was some, you know, hidden reason that some key superdelegates had a problem with this in the House. And I just, you know, it's possible, Mike, but I don't buy it. But, you know, if it makes you feel better, great.
It doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel worse.
Well,
because it shows us how close to the edge we are. Look, the reason for my first point is that, you know, there's this pattern of behavior that, you know, Pelosi took impeachment off the table. She's blocking any Justice Committee investigation into Cheney's outing of Valerie Plame. Pelosi and Rockefeller, together with his some of those other Blue Dog Democrats, are the ones who wanted the immunity provision in FISA. They're backing it.
I don't know that Pelosi actually on the telco immunity was there, but I get the gist of what you're saying. But I think at the end of the day, Mike, and you know, I think this is hard for people to fully really sort of swallow, because from where we sit, it seems so ridiculous.
I'm not all that horrified that Obama would move to the right. I mean, I figured he's a centrist all along.
Right,
I agree with you. You know, and we're not within a Hail Mary of being able to elect a liberal. So, you
right.
know, the 50-yard line looks pretty darn good to me.
No, I agree with you. I just think that at the end of the day, I think there's still a problem with too many Democrats, and I'm not saying the majority of Democrats here, But, you know, there's a critical mass when you have 25% of the Democrats who just, they are so self-conscious, they aren't willing to make a positive case, a proactive case on what makes for good security policy, what makes for good defense policy. They're just not willing to stand up yet, and we just have a long way to go. And I appreciate the call, Mike, you know, and, you know, look, still going to vote for Obama. But I can still see this as a capitulation. Let's go to Fernando from the blog. How you doing, Fernando? Fernando, you there? We don't have him. All right, let's go to Lance, calling from Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome to the program, Lance.
Yes, I was thinking, you know, they delayed the FISA vote by a day for Jesse Helms' funeral.
Yes, I know.
So let's get this straight. A dead Jesse Helms does more to stop this FISA bill than living Democrats do. What an utter disgrace. I'm voting for Jesse Helms in 2008. Zombie Jesse Helms. He's got my vote.
I honestly thought he had died a long time ago, but I'm so impressed by this guy who basically gave up his job so that he did not have to honor this man's passing. I mean, he was really one of the worst of the worst, and the fact that he's being deified by the conservatives is a perfect...
Well, it says a lot about them, doesn't it?
It says a tremendous amount about him. I mean, you got Mike
Jesse
Huckabee.
Helms is about the worst, and I know people might not know who this is, but a quick Google search. He is the worst member of the Senate since Pitchfork Tillman 100 years ago.
This guy was...
I mean, he's just vile.
Oh, absolutely. I mean...
I used to live in North Carolina, by the way.
Racist, homophobe,
He used to refer to the University of North Carolina, UNC, he used to refer to it as the University of Negroes and Communists.
Yep.
And he pronounced Negro in his own, you know, peculiar way.
Now tell me something, Lance. Now imagine I want you to see if you put this together. There's about a half dozen references that are made by right wingers. Now you know that they all called Martin Luther King a communist.
Yeah.
And a Soviet spy.
And gloated when he died.
If you look on the internet today, you will find a half dozen quotes from conservatives today saying the same thing about Barack Obama. They're saying the same exact thing. He's a communist. This is the way.
Well, there is one thing that they haven't stooped to, at least not yet. When King won the Nobel Prize and went to go collect it, they said that King and his followers, but his immediate circle, they were only doing it because they crave sex with white women. Now, that one's probably going to come probably in September or October. They're going to say Obama's in it just for the white bitches.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. I appreciate.
I mean, that's the only one they haven't done yet.
Oh, you got to give it time, buddy. You got to give them time. They'll get there. Oh, they will definitely get there. All right, we got to take a break. 800-989-1480. Coming up later in the hour, Lawrence Velvel is the dean of Massachusetts School of Law at Andover. He's the host of the radio program What the Media Doesn't Tell You on the World Radio Network. He's organizing a convention in September, essentially a conference, with the goal of planning strategies to prosecute George Bush for war crimes. We'll talk to him later in the hour. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking to Lawrence Belvel. He's setting up a he's dean of the Massachusetts School of Law. He's setting up a conference to work on specific strategies to prosecute George Bush for war crimes. I love it. Let's go to Donald, KTLK. Welcome to the program, Donald.
Yeah, hey, Sam. Good to hear your voice back on the radio here.
Thanks, appreciate it.
You know, I think people really need to just kind of calm down a little bit and stop and think for a second. With the exception of progressive talk radio, the entire media, print, television, and radio, are entirely controlled by the right wing. They're going to tell you what they want you to hear, and hopefully they think they can influence you. We need to understand that Barack Obama is a very intelligent man. He understands the political realities, and the right wing is going to beat the hell out of him, but he's still on his way to the presidency. And I've heard way too many people get, oh, I'm so passionate about this one thing, and I'm not going to vote at all. Well, they need to understand that if you keep your butt home on voting day, you are handing a vote to John McCain. And well, that's straight up, you need to understand that. This man is intelligent enough to know what's going on, and he is a constitutional scholar. He first has to be elected, though, in order to do anything.
Well,
I wanted to make that point to all your listeners, because I've heard too many people saying how upset they were about the FISA bill.
And now, wait a second.
They're not going to vote or whatever.
Now, Donald, hold on for a second, okay?
All right.
I think the gist of what you're saying is correct, but I think it's, first of all, and I'm not one of the people who, you know, I don't know that he's tacking to the right, and I don't care about rhetoric. There is something he could have done about this. There is something. I mean, he vowed that he was going to filibuster a bill that had immunity for these corporations. And so now, do I advocate staying home and not voting for Barack Obama? Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, I think
is this the end all be all? No.
But
Donald, he is smart, and his campaign is smart, and he knows it's July, and that come September, come October, we're not going to be talking about this. I mean, that's just a fact. You know,
right.
I mean,
and this way, the right wing cannot hold it over his head. Well, he voted against security for the country and blah, blah, blah. That's one of their biggest arguments, and that's one of the few that in the polling that the Republicans still traditionally have been beating the Democrats on the security issue. Well, this way, he didn't give them that weapon. He didn't give them that tool.
Well,
he's
a very
smart man. He knows how to change laws.
Listen,
and if he comes in as strong as I think he will bring a strong Democratic majority to Congress, and then we can begin to get some things straightened out. But he first has to get elected.
Well, I mean, listen, Donald, I agree with what you're saying, and I think that's certainly the calculation that he made. There's no doubt about it. And Obama is not the main villain in this story by
not
a long
at all.
Shot.
And I think I just need to hear that sometime. And I think you guys kind of get – I'm not you guys specifically, but talk show hosts in general. And remember, I'm only listening to progressive talk radio. But I think they need to understand that, you know, it wasn't as bad a day maybe as people made it out to be.
Well,
he made a political calculation, and I think in the long run it will pay off for him. But
well,
he has to get elected in order to get anything done.
Listen, I can argue with you as to whether or not there was some opportunity cost to this. I actually could argue to you that he could have made a case and used this FISA thing to actually wrap it around John McCain's neck. He could have come out and said, if you allow this type of lawbreaking, if you turn your back on this type of lawbreaking by George Bush, then you also turn your back upon the fact that he broke the law when he lied to the American public and brought them into a war of choice and lied to us. That you also turn your back on the lawbreaking that's involved with torture. And John McCain and George Bush think they can get away with walking all over the Constitution and think that they are above the democratic process. That's something Barack Obama could say. But he took the easier way out. Fine, a political calculation. But we don't have to be quiet about it. And I can still criticize him and still vote for him. And I hope others will too. We'll be right back. We'll be talking to Lawrence Belvel.
Don't you wait when you want to go. Don't you wait when you want to stop.
back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. Here all the rest of the week. 800-989-1480 is the number. We'll take some calls in the next segment. On the phone, pleasure to welcome Lawrence Velvel. He is the dean of the Massachusetts School of Law at Andover, host of the radio program What the Media Doesn't Tell You on World Radio Network. His website, velvelonnationalaffairs.com. He is organizing a convention at the school's facilities in September, the attendees of which will plan strategies to prosecute members of the Bush administration for war crimes. Welcome to the program, Lawrence.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so tell us about this this conference that you're holding, this convention, I guess. Who's going to be there, and what exactly is going to take place?
Well, number one, let me say, Sam, that it's not going to be at the school's facility. Oh. It's going to be elsewhere in Andover. The reason, and it's not going to be a convention, it's going to be a conference. And the reason that we're holding it is that it's become terribly clear by virtue of the fact that this misbegotten Iraqi war has followed after Vietnam, which nobody would have dreamed could have happened. And Arthur Schlesinger, in his last essay, said that we suffer from, quote, national stupidity, and, quote, the stupidity of our culture, that it did happen. There has been shown no way of preventing people from getting into wars and committing horrendous acts, and yet with any accountability. They have no accountability. We have seen that the Congress cannot stop wars. It couldn't stop it in Vietnam. It couldn't stop it today. We have seen some things in this war that are even worse than some of the things that happened in Vietnam in terms of torture, renditions, and so forth. And one fears, you know, that because the politicians can do what they want without any accountability, one fears, well, if Iraq could follow Vietnam, what is to stop a future president 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 years from now from doing the same thing that we did previously in Vietnam and Iraq? And I think that the only thing that could stop that is for presidents to know, as the current administration feared but successfully escaped, from, to know that there may be legal accountability for what the leaders do. Now, we people like myself cannot prosecute George Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld. We don't have that authority. All that we can do and all that we can plan to plan for is to persuade the authorities who do have prosecutorial power to bring cases so that ultimate decisions can be made by judges as to whether crimes have been committed. And we're well aware, of course, that although there have been some cases in the past, there cannot, within the foreseeable future, there cannot be such cases in the United States because American authorities won't bring, prosecutorial authorities won't bring such cases, and American courts probably wouldn't hear such cases. You know, one never knows for sure, but that is by far the most likely thing. But there is jurisdiction in foreign courts and in international courts. They hear such cases, and in foreign prosecutors and in prosecutors before international courts to bring such cases.
Let's just start with this. You're holding this conference. You're going to map out strategies which you can then basically provide to foreign courts as a way of basically mapping out how a prosecution for war crimes would take place.
Well, that's sort of right. What we can do is that we can map out things to present to prosecutors who could then present it to foreign courts, as has already been done. And in terms of mapping out, You know, although the people who attack us for doing this, which is basically ignorant right-wing mass media people, and I mean ignorant. They know no history. They know no law. All they know is they don't like the idea that American officials could be held to account. In terms of what's already been done to, quote, map out what the facts are and what the law is, there's already been four or five books written. Some of them are very well known. A recent book by a London professor and lawyer called Torture Team by Philippe Sands. Bugliosi's recent book, Elizabeth De La Vega, wrote a book last year. De La Vega is a former federal prosecutor. Bugliosi is a former state prosecutor. Colonel Wright, Anne Wright, has written a book. I'm not at liberty to say who exactly it is, but I happen to know that an extraordinarily prominent American law firm on the East Coast is currently writing a memorandum setting forth all the relevant facts and legal rules with regard to war crimes and violations of the Geneva Conventions, violations of the American Anti-Torture Statute and the American War Crimes Act. So there is already lots and lots of material available, and more is in preparation. Another book just crossed in draft form, just crossed my desk. That's been being written. It has been written. It's the first draft. The second draft has been sent to me by a prominent East Coast professor. There is already, as I say, much that is known, much that has been written, and the purpose of this conference is going to be that we hope to create an organization that will coordinate all of this and begin a considered and organized movement about it.
Hold on for one second. We're talking to Lawrence Belvel. He's the dean of the Massachusetts School of Law at Andover. He is organizing a conference in the fall, which will essentially coalesce around the idea and, I guess, create an organization that will help work on strategies for bringing to prosecute President George Bush for war crimes. I want to get to who the other targets your prosecution will be. But let's start with this question: where do you anticipate the most likely place there will be jurisdiction? I mean, you talk about the U.S. statutory statutes on against torture. You're talking about obviously the Geneva Convention. Where do you perceive which courts might be most likely to have jurisdiction?
Well, to have jurisdiction is one thing; to exercise it is another. Almost any court in the world will have jurisdiction under the concept known as universal jurisdiction. And universal jurisdiction means that if a crime has been committed against international law, and if the country at issue, which in this case would be the United States, will not take jurisdiction to try the people who committed the crime, then any court anywhere elsewhere would have jurisdiction. Now, Italy recently brought a case in which, if I remember correctly, something like 26 CIA people, some huge number, were tried in absentia along with Italian secret agency people and certain Italian military and political people, I gather, because of a rendition, kidnapping a guy off the streets, delivering him to, I forgot whether it was Syria, or I think it was Syria, where he was tortured. He turns out to have been innocent, this was a crime. The Italian court took jurisdiction over it and conducted a trial, and I don't yet know what the result of that trial is. People have been attempting to secure prosecutions in Germany, in France, and in Britain. You may remember that Pinochet was ordered, arrested by a Spanish court a number of years ago, and they grabbed him in Britain and brought him to trial. So courts anywhere around the world, under the concept of universal jurisdiction, would have jurisdiction. The question is whether prosecutors and courts would exercise it.
Okay, so now tell me who some of your targets or who you anticipate would be targets for prosecution, besides, of course, George Bush.
Well, there are a large number of people who seem to have participated in the planning and execution, for example, of torture and other crimes. Frankly speaking, I'm non-denominational about this, one might say. I would put I would think that if that people like Henry Kissinger, who is still alive, should be put on trial, and probably, though he repented 25 years too late, Robert McNamara, the rest of that crowd, Nixon and so forth, Johnson, Rusk, they're dead. Among the current group of people, there's, of course, Cheney, there's Addington, there's John Yoo, there's Jay Bybee, there's Jim Haynes.
Now, these are people who Yoo, Addington, Bybee, Haynes, specifically involved in the torture regime that Philippe Sands outlines in his book, Torture Team. I would assume Dick Cheney?
Yes, I thought I mentioned him. Yes.
And so what? So you've got issues of torture, which to me seem to be, at the very least, on a there's certainly a prima facie case, as you would say, as an attorney. What other crimes will you specifically focus on?
Well, I think that people will probably want to focus on questions of aggressive war and preemptive war. And I know there's a lot of people who want to focus on the question of fraudulent war and whether fraudulent war is an international crime or not. I don't know. I know that Bugliosi has written a book in which he takes the position that a fraudulent war is in effect murder under American statutes.
Yes.
These other issues will be discussed extensively at the conference. These other claims, I'm sure, will be discussed extensively at the conference.
Do you have a sense of who's going to be attending the conference at this point?
Well, to some extent, yes. I'm sure. I imagine my assistant, who's on vacation now, has been the person who's been in charge of getting people to come, inviting people to come. And there will be people from a lot of what one might call the usual suspects,
right.
You know.
All right, well, Lawrence, I'm sorry, we've run out of time. Lawrence Velvel, the Dean of Massachusetts School of Law. You can read more about this planned conference at velvelonnationalaffairs.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Lawrence.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you.
We got to take a break. We'll be right back. 800-989-1480. Cedar in from Malloy. We are back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to someone about the LiebermanMustGo.com website. That's right, folks. Joe Lieberman. God knows where Joe Lieberman is these days. Thank God she's no longer a Democrat. A couple of stories relevant to Joe Lieberman. I guess a report came out today that the companies that sold FEMA, those trailers, and Lauren, you'll remember this. Sam McCam is in effect, incidentally, folks. Lauren is in an insert. We had talked to, I think this is about a year ago now, caller called in, said that they were in these FEMA trailers They had to get out because the overwhelming, not just smell, but formaldehyde. And apparently the companies that sold these trailers to FEMA knew that there were these incredible amounts of formaldehyde. Of course, it's unsafe for you to live in an environment, particularly in a closed environment, like a trailer is a good example. And no surprise there. Meanwhile, CNN reported the other day that prisoners in Mississippi got coffee makers, pillowcases, dinnerware, all intended for victims of Hurricane Katrina. State's Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, Parks took more coffee makers, cleaning supplies, other items. Plastic containers ended up with the Mississippi Department of Finance Administration. Colleges, volunteer fire departments, other agencies received even more, but the Mississippi hurricane victims who originally were intended to receive the supplies got nothing. CNN revealed that that FEMA had stored $85 million worth of household items in warehouses for 2 years. Instead of giving the supplies to victims of the 2005 hurricane, FEMA declared them surplus and gave them all away to federal agencies in 16 states in February. Why is this relevant to Joe Lieberman? I hold in my hand a story from January 13th, 2007. I believe this is from McClatchy. Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman blasted the Bush administration last spring for failing to cooperate with the Senate's investigation of Hurricane Katrina. Now remember, this is in January 13th, 2007. Following Joe Lieberman's election back to the Senate as a Lieberman for Connecticut, Connecticut for Lieberman candidate. But now that he's in a key position to press the investigation, he is refusing to do so. Joe Lieberman, protecting the Bush administration, their malfeasance during Hurricane Katrina, and why, well, of course... We know why. Because he's just praying that John McCain gets in as president, because I think Joe Lieberman, if these Lieberman must go people have their way, will not be part of the Democratic caucus following the election. You know, and of course the Democrats are going to wait to find out if they get their 60 votes necessary. But man, would I'd like to see Joe Lieberman go. Let's go to the phones. Don, Sirius Satellite Radio in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How you doing, Don?
Okay. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing pretty well.
Okay. I was originally an Edwards supporter and sent him donations. And I really held my checkbook close until 2 months ago when I sent Obama $100, and now with this FISA and the faith-based initiative, the next time they call me, I'm going to ask for my $100 back. I will vote for Obama, but I have no other choice. But we can't have McCain. But we need to talk with our checkbook.
I think you're right about that, Don. I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea necessarily. We got to vote for Obama. There's no doubt about it. But it's certainly worth letting him know you don't appreciate what he did on FISA. All right, we've got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. We'll be right back after this. We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Taking you through Hump Day. 800-989-1480 is the number. Streaming live at NovaMRadio.com. Sammy Cam in full effect at SamCedarShow.com, SamCedarShow.blogspot.com. And on the phone, David Waldman, front page, page blogger, Daily Kos, writes under the name CagroX. He's here to talk about the new website by the folks at Brave New Films, LiebermanMustGo.com, which is collecting signatures to urge the Senate to strip, or at least the Democrats, to strip Joe Lieberman of his committee chairmanship and rank. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi, thanks very much, Sam.
So my understanding is you guys have been able to collect something like 41,000 signatures?
I think the number actually went over 43,000 by the time that they turned it in. Yeah, Brave New Films really took the lead in this and put the petition out there. And, you know, we did a little bit of promotion for it on the blogs and were able to deliver that today. So, yeah, thanks to Brave New Films for that work.
All right. Well, so tell me. I mean, what's the point here, man? I mean, Joe Lieberman he's been such part of the program.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's really just run out of friends on the Democratic side. The only people who are willing to say anything about him at all that could even remotely be construed as positive are the Democratic senators who are his colleagues, who can only say, we don't know what we're going to do with him, and nothing's changed, and he's a valuable member, and don't ask us about this anymore.
Now, I mean, you know, I mean, I understand why they say this, right? I mean, they say this, obviously, because they still got to work with the guy. They got to find out if the Democrats are going to pick up enough votes in the Senate after the election in the fall for them to have a veto-proof and at least a filibuster-proof majority. So they're holding their fire. But, I mean, Joe Lieberman, is he going to speak at the Republican National Convention?
It's looking more and more like it. He certainly hasn't, not only has he not ruled it out, he's actually said that it's very likely that he will. So, you know, I mean, at this point, if the guy endorses the Republican candidate, goes to the Republican National Convention, and votes against Democratic initiatives that are at the top of our agenda, there's really very little point in continuing to pretend that he's a member of the Democratic caucus.
Now, Chris Dodd came out today basically with this line that, look, you know, this is not helpful. Is that right?
Yeah, he did. He did say that. And he's in an even tighter spot than most of the other members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate. He's also his Connecticut colleague. So
they got to take plane trips together and this and that. And
Joe
probably gives him his frequent flyer miles, that type of thing.
I don't know how close their relationship still is. But, you know, this is something that is tighter and more difficult for him than for any other senator. But then, on the other hand, you know, matters like this that really mean something to the grassroots and to the people who are the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, we very often find that senators are noncommittal for a very long time, and then they eventually end up coming around and following right behind the people after all.
Now, why now? Why present this petition now? Why have LiebermanMustGo.com now as opposed to, you know, November 8th or whatever, November 4th, whatever, the day after the election? We find out how many Democratic senators we have, or why not 6 months ago?
Oh, well, it's a good question. Why not 6 months ago? I suppose it has taken some time for people who were organizing this to really get down to where are the pressure points in this process. It's a very specific process that they go through in assigning these committee chairs and leadership positions. And we wanted to take some time to figure out what's the process, where do you jump in on these things. And once we found that it's this Senate, it's a Democratic Steering and Outreach Committee. This is sort of an inside baseball thing. This is not a public committee that holds hearings and writes legislation, but an internal Democratic caucus committee that parcels out these committee chairmanships themselves. And so most people don't know anything about that. And when we are able to pin it down like that and find that that's the starting point for the process, that's when we begin to put some pressure on them. And we put pressure on them now in advance of November, just so that, A, it's no surprise, B, they know we've been asking for this for a long time, and C, we put them on notice that, yeah, we know where this process begins, and we're going to watch you.
And basically, it may put a little pressure on Joe Lieberman, just like how much of a French kiss he's going to give John McCain at the Republican National Convention.
Yeah, exactly. Why wait for him to set that on fire? We'll just tell him.
Now, we're talking to David Waldman. He's a front-page blogger at Daily Kos. He writes under the name CagroX. We're talking about LiebermanMustGo.com, a website where you can show your dissatisfaction with Joe Lieberman having a committee chairmanship for the majority party, one which he barely seems to support. He's been actively campaigning for John McCain. Of course, he and Lindsey Graham. Basically going around. I mean, it's almost like they're the bridesmaids for John McCain, making sure that his coattails don't drag in the mud. But let me ask you this, David. You know, when this whole thing started in 2006, where members of basically the left blogosphere, some of us on radio, began to say, look, we've got to get rid of Joe Lieberman. He's undercutting Democrats. This guy does not he is basically out there just working this game for himself. We saw him on Fox all the time. We saw him providing the right-wing talking points. There was, of course, the Democratic establishment looked upon the bloggers, looked upon us who were promoting Ned Lamont's campaign, as being out of touch, as being interlopers, as not understanding who Joe Lieberman was. Now we're a year and a half later, pretty close to 2 years now, I guess, and it's clear who Joe Lieberman is to just about everybody. Do you sense any recognition on the part of the Democratic establishment that the Netroots is a leading indicator of what people are feeling?
No, but they should be thinking that. I think they're really, really resistant to that because their whole job description is to be able themselves to predict what is the leading edge of public opinion, and they're just missing it repeatedly. And on this and any other number of subjects that are of importance, the Netroots have been right, essentially. And, this is not about patting bloggers on the back. The reason bloggers tend to be right about public opinion is because bloggers are the public, and they just right. have their discussions online. It's just like you would have over around the water cooler at the office. So really, there's no magic or surprise to it. I'm surprised that it's taken this long for politicians to really grasp that and why they don't consider bloggers to be a leading edge of public opinion when they are public and have opinions. I don't know.
Are we going to see more from LiebermanMustGo.com?
Oh, almost certainly. I think that the planning of this really is up to the folks at Brave New Film, so you'd have to speak directly with them, and I'm sure you'll get that chance to tell you what's up next. This is just something that I've been interested in personally and have had the pleasure of helping them out in their planning with.
All right. Well, David Waldman, Cagro X from Daily Kos, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, the site is LiebermanMustGo.com. Check it out. Still, I'm sure you can sign the petition and just bookmark it, because hopefully there'll be more actions taken in the future to get this guy out of the Democratic caucus. We're going to take a break. Number's 800-989-1480. We'll be right back, and I am going to tell you about this new plan that Department of Homeland Security is looking at to shock you on a plane. We'll be right back. Folks, we're going to be, it's just all going to be electroshocks. Cops in New York City now, a lot of them I see carry taser guns. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. I don't even know what to tell you about this story, folks. I mean, where did I get this from? Oh, gosh, I don't know where this came from. A story I found, I can't even figure out where I got this from. A guy named Jeffrey Denning, writing about aviation security. Senior government official with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has expressed great interest in a so-called safety bracelet that would serve as a stun device. The electronic ID bracelet, as it's referred to, would be worn by every traveler until they disembark the flight at their destination. So, folks, instead of getting a ticket, they'd give you a bracelet. Basically, it's like a watch. There's a video with this. We got to find the link and we'll put it up on samcedarshow.com. It would be a government-funded GPS device containing personal, private, and confidential information. And it would shock the customer worse than an electric dog collar if the passenger got out of line. Let's play the audio. You got to see the whole video. It gives you like a little animation of how it shows. But this is some of the audio from this video that basically explains what the device is. I don't know, it's some Canadian company or something. Let's play this, number 15.
Is there a solution to deterring hijackers once they are on the aircraft? Yes, there is a very viable, workable answer. It starts here, when passengers are issued their tickets. At that time, they can also be fitted with a special electronic ID bracelet that they will wear until they disembark the flight at their destination. These electronic coded bracelets will make traveling much more convenient for the public. It will replace the need to carry a ticket by containing all pertinent passenger information. In addition, the bracelet could permit tracking of the passenger through the terminal, including carry-on luggage. Checked luggage can be coded to match the bracelet to ensure no tampering or diversions. By further equipping each bracelet with EMD technology, the bracelets will allow crew members using radio frequency transmitters to quickly and effectively subdue hijackers. The electromuscular disruption signal overrides the attacker's central nervous system and will render even the most elite and aggressive terrorist completely immobile for several minutes.
There you go, folks. Electromuscular, what is it? Electromuscular disruption. According to DHS, Department of Homeland Security official Paul S. Ruwalt of the Science and Technology Directorate, Office of Research and Development, in a letter written to the inventor whom he had previously met, Ruwalt wrote, "To make it clear, we, the federal government, are interested in the immobilizing security bracelet and look forward to receiving a written proposal." I can't wait to get one of these things from Myla. Let's test this thing out on three-year-olds. Don't want to go to sleep? Oh, wrong button. There you go. Unbelievable. Let's go to Fernando on the internet, middle of Texas. Fernando from the blog, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Sam. It's a real honor to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, buddy.
I heard you earlier say we have to vote for Obama, and I wanted to explore that space with you just a little bit for just a second, because I want to vote for him so bad it hurts. It's such a historic campaign. He has done some, for a candidate anyway, because they're all politicians,
right,
amazing things. And I'm not going to pretend that Americans haven't ever been spied on before in the past, because we know most of our history there's been some bunch of spying. And we didn't know about it, and it's been going on now, and we don't know about it. But my problem with the vote today is he's a constitutional law professor. So he knows better. He knows this bill is unconstitutional. He knows it would not survive a serious challenge. And he votes for it anyway, for what I consider to be political expedience. There's judges out there who have already proclaimed it, late as a week ago, that, the FISA bill is still in effect. So we really don't even need this. There's a perfectly,
Right. The federal judge in California said Wednesday that the wiretapping law established by Congress, that being FISA, Congress appears clearly to have intended to and did establish the exclusive means for foreign intelligence activities to be conducted. In other words, there is no inherent power for the president to do this. It was vested in him under certain conditions, and that being the FISA statute.
Right. And thank you for clearing that up. But what bothers me is that I understand we've been spied on, but I think that as I look at this vote and knowing that he knows best, that he's covering for other Democrats who, have at least a responsibility to let us know this was going on because of their position in government, and we're not able to either because they swore to secrecy or for whatever reason, but it didn't happen. And so he's covering for them. And, I understand that there's reasons they may or may not choose to do that. And I think we can find immunity for people that had concerns and were unable to say anything.
All right, Fernando, listen, I got to take a break. I'm up against the heartbreak here. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to answer this on the other side. I know what you're talking about here. You bring up some good points. And,
I'm worried about him bringing in encouraging fascism.
I hear you. Let me, I'll address it on the other side.
Okay,
I'll be right back. Cedar in from Malloy.
I got my mind set on you. And this time I know it's real. The feeling that I feel. I know if I put my mind to it. I know that I really could do it. I got my mind set.
We are back. I haven't heard that in a long time, Ian. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Number's 800-989-1480. Streaming live at NovaAmRadio.com. Sammy Cam is in effect at SamCedarShow.com. We do have that video up, apparently, the entire video of the security measures. You got to scroll down the blog a little bit to see it. It's pretty crazy. Before the break, we were talking to Fernando, one of the Nobel-nominated bloggers at SamCedarShow.com, and Fernando was talking about how, I guess, disappointed, angry he is at Barack Obama's voting for this FISA bill, and he brings up the fact that Barack Obama is a constitutional law professor. And Fernando's theory is that he knows this will not stand up to constitutional muster. I don't know. I mean, I haven't contemplated the notion that Barack Obama thinks that this thing could be challenged. The ACLU apparently is contemplating mounting a challenge to the constitutionality of this FISA statute, which basically allows for really no legitimate warrant process. The immunity aside, This bill is just horrible. I don't know that Obama feels that it will fail constitutionally speaking. In some ways, that for me mitigates the horridness of the vote. I mean, look, the bottom line is Obama is not the perfect candidate, and this makes him even less of a perfect candidate. And I particularly have problem with something like this FISA vote as opposed to rhetorical so-called flip-flops or moves to the center. I don't care about that. This is something he could have actively participated in. This is something that he promised that he would filibuster, and he didn't do it. You know, with that said, though, I mean, this is a political calculation, in my estimation, on his behalf. He doesn't think we're going to go anywhere. He doesn't think we're going to vote for McCain. He doesn't think we're going to stay at home. And, frankly, with good reason. And I don't know how you help your cause to not vote for him. Look, did the Democrats get the message when some of us voted for Ralph Nader? I don't think so. They're certainly not going to get the message if you vote for John McCain or Bob Barr or don't vote at all. I think the idea is this is not a game of checkers. This is a game of chess. And this is about, you don't want to give money to Obama? Give it to some progressive candidates run for Congress. Make the new Congress reverse this law. I mean, that's the only answer I have. There are some things you can't cut off your nose to spite your face. It just doesn't make sense. Let's go to Mike in listening on XM Radio in Cinnaminson, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Thank you, Sam. Good to hear you again.
Thank you.
I'll tell you, it's good to question Obama on this. I agree with you, you know. A perfect candidate would have been, what's his name? Dennis Kucinich would have been a perfect candidate, in my estimation. But Obama is much better than John McCain, of course. Other than a miracle from God, the only other chance we have is Obama. But we got to question him. We can't just go by, he had his reasons, his motives. We kind of want to know what those motives and reasons were.
Yep.
Okay, because like the flip flop on this, come on, you know, that's like what's his name, Colin Powell. When at first Colin Powell said there's no weapons of mass destruction and was totally against going into Iraq, and then he comes back all of a sudden and testifies before the UN. Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, there are weapons. Well, of course, that gun or something somebody was talking about, everything was out of his head. But, we don't need somebody in there that's going to, flip-flop or show fear. The war is on between the right and the wrong, you know. And I agree with you and everybody else and say, well, at least we got to question him. We got to let him know, hey, look here, you know, he can't be, getting our votes, getting our money, what's he going to do later on when he gets in there? What else is he
going to
flip-flop on?
Well, you may be right, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. I mean, I think, look, I wouldn't equate this vote to lying this nation into war. You got to ask yourselves. I mean, at the end of the day, if Obama can get us universal health care, is this a fair trade-off? The aggravating part is that it didn't need to happen. Did the fact that 25,000 people on My Barack Obama basically asked him not to vote this way, is that going to affect his stance on the war? If that he knows that people are this angry about it, very well could basically be a shot across the bow saying, like, look, if you're getting this type of blowback on something that is so, this is not a question of its importance, but in terms of the awareness of the American public, is so narrow. If you're getting this type of blowback, it's a heads up for the future, and this is what we have to do. We have to exercise our power. Let's go to Laura in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Welcome to the program, Laura.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging in there, Laura.
I'm one of those people from Iowa who attends the caucus events all before the caucuses happen in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see Barack Obama in person in a very small event. And one of the impressions I had of him the next day was that he's clearly a very goal-oriented individual. When I saw him at the caucus event, you could tell his whole reason for being there was to drum up caucus supporters. Well, you take this a little further, and now you're looking at him working on being president. So everything he's doing is geared toward that. It confirms my impression of him.
Well, I mean, I think that's true, Laura, but I mean, then the question is, okay, that's fine, but this was not the only way this was not the only solution to that that problem or that dilemma. How do I retain my goal as being president? You know, there are two paths you could take here. You could attempt to filibuster this FISA thing. You could take a principled stand. You could go out and you could show your aggressiveness and muscle in fighting for American values. I mean, that's the issue here. I understand that he was making a political calculation and he was doing it to become president. But the question is, you know, is that the only answer he could have made? Is that the only route that he could have followed? And I think, you know, from my perspective, he could have followed that other route. It was just a question of, you know, how he was going to approach this. So I agree with you. He's doing this for political expediency, but I disagree with his analysis that this is actually going to achieve his political goals. This is more this is going to bring more value to that to the achievement of that goal.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. It just reconfirms for me my impression of him.
Yeah.
The other thing, my impression of him is that he's a very smart guy, so I would not underestimate him. In having thought through all the ramifications of all of this, I also got no impression of him that he was any sort of dishonest or underhanded. What you saw is what you got.
Yeah, I think for the most part that's true. And, you know, I think, you know, if you look back on his record, he has made these political calculations in the past. And you know, I don't know if this is an indication of how he will govern as president. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't, but, you know, like I've said in the past, and I appreciate the call, Lauren, thank you so much for holding.
Thank you.
You know, in the past I've said I would love to see a liberal Congress, a left Congress, pulling Obama to the left. That's the debate I want to see. I just don't want it by Obama moving too far to the right, but this isn't a question of left or right to me. This is really more of a question that speaks to the fact that the guy is a constitutional law professor, and he said he was going to filibuster this. Bill in East Hampton, New York. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Yeah, here's a thought that I was thinking about this whole FISA thing, is that why don't we just start using it against the Republicans, so to speak, very simply, is that we know that there was a whole bunch of emails that have been missing from the RNC that they wiped from their computers. Well, since they now have the new FISA bill that gives you access to everything that's been locked up, we can go find those emails and see what was in them, as well as why don't we go see what's going on with Karl Rove and what his little underhanded tricks like with Ken Blackwell. All that stuff should be in those emails. Let's go after him. Let's get a subpoena.
Bill, I don't know what you've been drinking out there, but you think the Republican Department of Justice is going to do that?
Well, let's just say you can get the ball rolling, and that's just another thing where they're stalling and forestalling in front of the American public. Because this is what's been their downfall, is that they keep, more and more people are waking up to the fact that they're a bunch of liars.
Well, I mean, I agree with you, but I don't think the FISA is going to lead you in that direction. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but, I mean, that's the thing. Is this FISA thing? It's off the table. It's off the table now. John McCain, he didn't even show up for this vote. It was so important to the national security. But it's off the table. Obama voted for it. The Democrats let it happen. It's off the table. That's what's so infuriating. But if you want to, take action, go to Accountability Now. Go to Blue America. And target these Democrats that allowed this to happen. All right, we're going to take a break. 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Lauren's IMing me, telling me she loves Jonathan Richman of the Modern Lovers. And he also played in, like, some of those, like one of those Farrelly Brother movies. Like, everybody loves Something About Mary or something like that. He's actually in the movie playing. Sam Cedar filling in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. Sammy Cam is in effect. And, yes, folks, I am wearing stripes. That's right. That happens, like, I think virtually never. I think it's the first time I've ever worn a striped shirt in my entire life. Usually it's plaid. But why talk about it when you can show it on the Sammy Cam at samcedarshow.com? Let's go to Kelly, listening to Sirius Satellite Radio, Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the program, Kelly.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Listen, it's three things that I believe people need to be aware about. First of all, I think the Pfizer bill, him voting for it, wasn't a bad thing, because if you look at some of the provisions in it, it does not grant total immunity, okay? And Barack Obama made that point clear. And I believe he knows that it's not, you know.
Now, wait a second. When do you say it doesn't grant total immunity? Be more explicit.
Well, when I heard Barack Obama speak, I don't know, maybe a week ago, he said some of the provisions that was written in the bill did not grant total immunity to these companies. And
well, that's right.
But
Kelly, what it actually involves is they simply have to make the case that they received notice from the Department of Justice or from the government officials. That's it. So really, the judge who would sit in this case, it's not specifically automatic immunity. The judge has to sign off on the immunity, but the judge has no ability to actually look and see whether or not the instructions they received were legitimate. They just have to certify that they did receive instructions. So it is essentially granting them immunity.
Oh, and another thing. Here's my three things with Obama, and this is what unequivocally will make me vote for him. Will he appoint judges that won't overturn Roe v. Wade? Will he not rush to judgment to go to war?
Yep.
You know, these are some of the things that you can undoubtedly, no matter what you think about some of the flip-floppers you may think he have done, these critical things will not change. And if people think that voting for McCain is going to be the answer, then, you know, let them do what they want to do. But those core values and those core issues to me are the most important, and it should be to all Democrats.
Well, I mean, look, I understand the idea that they're the most important to you. I also understand that there are other issues that are more important to others. But let me say this, Kelly. I think the gist of what you're saying, I think, is accurate. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Al Gore didn't run on as progressive of a health care plan as Obama. Is it a single payer? No. Al Gore did not run on as an aggressive of an energy policy as Obama. Al Gore did not run on as progressive of a foreign policy as Obama. And the fact of the matter is, we have a relatively speaking, relative to what we usually get, a fairly left of center relative to what we usually get. So I agree with you. But at the same time, Kelly, and I appreciate the call, it's perfectly legitimate for people to be upset about this. And it's also the expression of this anger. It's also putting the Obama campaign on notice as to, you know, how far you can get away with this. That's the bottom line. Frederick, listening on KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Frederick.
I this other guy was just talking to. What we do here, we're poisoning the well. We have a situation right here where whoever let this bill come to vote anyway was kind of crazy to do this. Republicans would never. This would die in committee as far as Republicans concerned.
You're absolutely right.
But to sit back and beat up on our candidate right now, we're giving the other guys room to beat us with. We can't agree on anything. Remember President Dukakis or President Jared Kerry? The same thing happened and stuff. We want everything at one time and stuff. Look at the big picture. As far as the immunity goes, they're protected from civil process, but they're still not protected from criminal. So they both can be prosecuted under President Obama.
Who's going to bring charges?
If there's a President Obama, maybe a district attorney, maybe Attorney General, who knows, Attorney General Clinton or someone else, who knows.
But who's going to have standing, Frederick? Here's the, I mean, you know, I just don't know. I mean, how do you prove that there's a victim to these crimes? If you don't have access to this stuff, if it's all state secrets.
Will, I'm just trying to say that President Obama will have access to it. They're going to appoint, they're going to appoint a some type of counsel looking to these things.
All right. Here's the bottom line, Frederick, and I appreciate the call. You may be right about this. That may be the case. It is July. There was a political calculation here that if there was any blowback, it was going to dissipate by September, October. I think it will. I think people won't even be talking about this in a month and a half. I don't think people are going to be talking about it in a month. So I think it's fine that, I think it's fine that people express their anger about it, and I wouldn't worry about it too much. If, you know, if the American population was listening to me about this FISA bill, this would never happen. So I'm not so worried that my criticism right now is going to sink the Obama campaign. Obama's going to be fine. He's very fortunate that John McCain, you could put Jesse Helms up against, you could put a cadaver up against John McCain and they would win. That said, I can understand why Obama sees this as an uphill fight. And if he thought he was going to gain advantage by voting for this bill, that's what he did. All right, folks, tomorrow's another night. Scott, Michael, Charlie, thanks for the calls. I'm sorry I couldn't get to you tonight. We will be back. NoVam Radio tomorrow night. Mike will be back next week. I'll be here tomorrow. See you then.